nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, I guess it's my turn now that we just sat around for a while. Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com as we broadcast live from our palatial studios here in Dripping Springs, Texas, looking for a little Theacane that's coming through possibly maybe in a couple of days. Hopefully we're going to get some rain out of it, not a lot of wind. Theacane, well, yeah, you see, first it was a hurricane, and then the girls wanted to be politically correct, so then they changed it to Himicanes, and now because him and her, you know, that's not cool, so they're they, so it's a Theacane. Well, don't get me started with that. First up this morning, well, next hour, our next show, we're going to talk with Robert Murphy. Very interesting stuff, and you're gonna enjoy it because we love talking about money and gold and what's going on. And he has a very cool article on the Mises Institute website called "The Theory and Brief History of the U.S. Gold Standard." And if you want to put it into a little context, maybe the 3, 4, 5 trillion—we don't know how much new dollars have been put into circulation via the Federal Reserve Bank of New York and other people, well, the Fed mostly, for this whole COVID rescue thing that we're going to talk about first hour. It'll put this idea of we used to be on a gold standard for a long, long time, and these little paper things were actually backed by something. And now, as my dear friend Andrew Goss, who's no longer with us, said, the only thing that backs the dollar today is F-16. So we'll leave it at that. Talk with Robert Murphy and gold next show. First up, though, is a fun guy. We've had James Perloff on before. It's been a long, long time. He really interesting fellow. Has quite a background. And was actually a bit with autistic behavior. I didn't know that till I read his complete website this morning, or his complete bio. He's been a journalist for a very long time, wrote for a lot of cool magazines, and he wrote The Shadows of Power, Tornado in a Junkyard, The Case Against Darwin and the Lonely Warrior, and the Pieces of the Jigsaw, all about the New World Order thing. So he's writing, been in the belly of the beast for a long time, and he's got a new book out called COVID-19 that we're going to talk about. And Mr. James Perloff, it's a pleasure to have you here. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you very much, Patrick, for having me back on. Second time on the show.
Yeah, second time, yeah. So this COVID-19 book just came out now, right? And the agendas to come.
Last Thursday, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the agendas to come. How long was this baby in the making? Did you start writing it right away when this thing started?
I was working on a book on 9/11, a very extensive book. I'm sure it would have been over 400 pages. It's still in the works on my computer. But as the COVID crisis unfolded and the lockdowns began, it became clear that we were in a serious emergency of our future political freedoms, and that this had actually supplanted 9/11 in urgency. So I put up a major blog post called 9/11 Red Pilled. But as you know, as weeks would go, each week would go by, new things would develop regarding COVID-19. So I'd put updates in, and then some people said, well, how do we know where the updates are? I said, well, you know, I'll italicize the updates and I'll put a date on them. But eventually, putting a lot of italicized paragraphs in there with dates made the article kind of confusing. And the article became too long to read online, and the book itself that I've developed out of that is actually over 200 pages. So about the time of the George Floyd riots, when we were distracted for a couple of weeks, I said, you know what? I can't just keep updating this online post. We really need to have a book out there. So it's just out, and here it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the reason you can't quite read it.
Here, I got it right here, too.
Blue stripe because it's a proof copy. Oh, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be overlay you and I, but we'll do it like that for now. But you'll see the picture there. That's a good. That's a great picture. That's the picture that goes around that says that's the COVID, right? Something like that. That
That, right. Yeah. And it's actually the artist made it into the planet Earth surrounded by those red spikes of the COVID-19 virus. So there's a whole Earth that's under the PSYOP right now. And we're trying to give people a choice between the blue and the red pill.
Yeah. The old red pill. So you've written, James Perloff, about this New World Order kind of global thing for a long time. I mean, you go way back, right?
Right. In 1985, I started writing for the New American Magazine, and I wrote an article on Pearl Harbor in 1986 as a false flag, one of the Kennedy assassination in 88. And in 88, I was asked to write an article on the Council on Foreign Relations, which at that time we were looking kind of like for tangible faces of the establishment, who these 1% people were. Mm-hmm. And the Council on Foreign Relations is the body that they use to connect to the government and provide cabinet level personnel. So I was writing an article on that. It became so long, they said, let's turn this into a book. So that became The Shadows of Power, which sold over 100,000 copies and is still selling pretty well today.
Shadows of Power, and folks can still get that and take a look at your research and your insights into this thing what they call the New World Order that we can talk about today and get your ideas on that. So, James Perloff, as we dig into the book, COVID-19, do you think the same people, the same crowd, is behind this whole COVID thing?
Oh, absolutely. No one else would have the power to control media and politicians the way they have. I give an example in the book. You know, for some people say, well, why would all the politicians be coordinated? There's a great video up on YouTube. It's been there for a long time. It's called Two Prime Ministers, One Speech. It's the prime ministers of Canada and Australia in 2003 advocating the war in Iraq, and they give the word for word the identical speech. And it shows that, you know, across the oceans, the same people are being controlled. And same with the media. You know, I have a book that I refer to occasionally. It's called America's 60 Families by Ferdinand Lundberg, written in 1937. Now, Ferdinand Lundberg was one of the greatest financial journalists of his time. He wrote for the major financial journals, such as the Wall Street Journal. But he wrote a book, and it was not a conspiracy theory. He documented everything with evidence. He showed that there were 60 families that actually owned America. And that was true of the media. He has a chapter in there called The Press of the Plutocracy, where he showed that every newspaper chain in America was owned by the 60, except for one, the Howard Scripps chain. And, you know, it's gradually consolidated its power, this oligarchy, so that in 1983, it had 50 corporations controlling all media. And today it's down to 5. You know, you've got CBS just merged with Viacom, so it's down from 6. But you've also got Time Warner and Disney GE and News Corp. You know, those are the 5 that run basically all the media. And so you turn on your cable TV and you've got hundreds of channels. You think all these choices. But if you look, you'll find that just about all of those hundreds of channels are owned by just 5 corporations. You know, ABC News and ESPN are owned by Disney, you know, and the Wall Street Journal is owned by News Corp, as is Fox. So there's very little diversity despite the numbers of options to look at. They're basically all telling you the same thing, except they some will give you a conservative slant, some will give you a liberal slant.
You think that's just to give you a fastball in the dirt? So we perceive Fox as being more, you know, more conservative and more Trump-friendly. Yeah. But do you think that's just a facade, just to kind of don't get too out of balance as far as perception?
Yeah, I think it's to give the people the illusion of choice. You know, we have 2 political parties you can vote for, basically, in America, the Democrats or the Republicans. So they give you a choice, but they only give you 2 choices. That's it. And when I was growing up as a kid in Boston, we had 2 newspapers, the Boston Herald and the Boston Globe. The Boston Globe would give you the Democrat liberal perspective. Boston Herald would give you the Republican conservative perspective. But neither one would challenge the basic paradigm. So, again, there was illusion of choice, minimum choices. Today, the choice is kind of between Fox and CNN or Fox and NBC to give liberals and conservatives that idea that they do have a choice, but actually you have to turn outside to alternative media to find real journalism going on, real journalism going on.
Sure, sure. And James Perloff is with us. If you'd like to join us and ask questions about that, and we're going to really dig into some of the see where the bodies are buried on this whole COVID thing. I don't mean that strange, but you can join us, Patrick, at oneradionetwork.com, 888-663-6386. On the media, we've heard over the years, do you agree that this whole control started way back, 1900s, Rockefeller and these guys with AP, and didn't they kind of jump in there, James?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about with book by Ferdinand Lundberg. In fact, in 1917, when America went to war, there were very few who spoke out against the war. There was one particular congressman, I hope his name will come to me.
Lindbergh?
But
maybe?
He actually, for point.
Lindbergh, maybe?
Oh, Lindbergh was one of those who opposed it. But there was one congressman who actually documented that the Morgan interests had purchased the most powerful newspapers in the country, were controlling their editorial policy.
Wow.
And that's the congressional record. That was back in 1917. So yeah, definitely goes way back.
Mm-hmm. So people perceive things like NPR, of course, is not, and BBC even, right? They're locked in with the globalist, are they not, the BBC?
Oh, sure. Definitely. Definitely. BBC is, if you follow media, BBC is under heavy criticism for just following the establishment line. And they do so more and more so over the years.
I wonder, do you have any theories on really how they do it? Have you talked to people on the inside, on the big, you know, I've been in broadcasting, James, for 50 years, and I was fired a lot, but I was never really told what to say, what not to say. Just when I veered off the reservation, you get fired. Is that pretty much how it's done?
Cheryl Atkinson, used to be a CBS News reporter. I've got excerpts from a report there where they were exposing the fact some during the H1N1 flu epidemic, it was not nearly as bad as the CDC was saying. They were covering up the actual statistics, and CBS was going to break that story, but they killed that story. And there's a guy in alt media I've spoken to who he said he worked for a 50,000-watt mainstream station, and he did a one-hour program on 9/11. There is suppression of information, and I don't think a reporter is going to get away with saying anything that is radically challenging. Maybe a little wiggle room, but I don't think anybody's going to be really able to come out and oppose the main narratives in mainstream, or they won't last too long.
So what do you think the goals and some of the bullet points of whoever these people are with this COVID thing in your book? I mean, what are the goals, James Perloff, in your opinion?
You know, one of the most absurd things is that they're mandating vaccines, and the government is pouring huge amounts of taxpayer money into vaccine companies. For just as one example, AstraZeneca in Britain has received that $1.2 billion from the U.S. government to produce COVID vaccines. And AstraZeneca has actually started manufacturing hundreds of millions of doses of vaccine without even waiting for trial results. Now, when did you ever hear of a company that doesn't know its product's going to work or not actually starting to manufacture? And there's a company called Apigex Solutions, mm-hmm. which has been given $138 million by the Department of Defense. Since when is the Department of Defense a healthcare company? But they've given Apigex $138 million to start producing syringes. And this is a subsidiary of Apigex called Rapid USA. And they have a commercial on YouTube, which I quote from in the book. And their CEO boasts that they're producing millions and millions of syringes. And they say that every single man, woman, and child in America will be injected with 2 to 4 doses. And I'm asking myself, how does a syringe manufacturer, this is not even a healthcare company, how does he know that every American, every man, woman, and child is going to get 2 to 4 doses of vaccine? He's been told something. And he also, by the way, in that that commercial, he shows how every syringe, well, it's an option, he says, as the syringes can have a RFID chip on them. And that's very Orwellian.
Yeah.
So a lot of these things we're seeing predicted that people said were conspiracy theories are happening. Another one I should mention, because when I first heard it, I thought maybe that's just a conspiracy theory, is the digital tattoo. I thought that was a conspiracy theory that people would have digital tattoos. But it turns out that that is not a a theory at all.
Yeah, I don't even know. What is digital tattoos? First time I'm hearing of that. It's an idea that
I'll
you
actually
can...
actually define that.
Yeah, it's an actually a tattoo that has some digital encoding on it?
Yeah, let me quote the university spokesman who's leading this project. I'm sorry, I don't know if all this...
That's all right.
...memorized, of course. So I have to flip through or I'll look for it on... I can break that.
Yeah, we're going to do a break here. I mean, you can maybe take a look at it.
Okay, so this is from Rice University School of Bioengineering. This is from their website. Quote, Kevin McHugh, an assistant professor of bioengineering at Rice since this summer, and a team of his at his previous institution, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, report on their development of quantum dot tattoos that fluoresce with information after they're injected as part of a vaccination. These tags are incorporated in only some of an array of sugar-based microneedles on a patch. When the needles dissolve in about two minutes, they deliver the vaccine and leave the pattern of tags just under the skin where they become something like a barcode tattoo. Instead of ink, this highly specific medical record consists of copper-based quantum dots embedded in biocompatible micron scale capsules. The near-infrared dye is invisible, but the pattern set can be read and interpreted by a customized smartphone. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation came to us and said, hey, we have a real problem knowing who's vaccinated, said McHugh, who was recruited to join Rice with funding to the Cancer Prevention and Research Institute of Texas. So they've got it, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, asking Rice University School of Bioengineering to develop a digital tattoo that will have your vaccination record. If we go on, we can talk about how in West Africa they are now to pioneering a system that will not only have your medical record, but your financial record incorporated. They work with MasterCard on that.
With the tattoo and all
so
the digital stuff.
This is all real. This is all happening. So it's not a theory. We're really talking Mark of the Beast stuff here.
Yeah. James Perloff is with us. Stay right there, sir. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. We'll do a little break here. So if you'd like to join the show, you can. Please do. And nice to have you here. We're going to talk about gold and them there hills with Robert Murphy in about an hour or so. If you care to join the show this morning, it is Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. I think we have two more days of our sale on pine pollen. You've heard us talk about it over the years. We think it's one of the best nutrient supplements really on the planet. One of the reasons it's a food, and that's pretty cool. I mean, it's like so many species in the forest use pine pollen as kind of their mojo. It's they don't go to Whole Foods, so they just kind of eat pine pollen. And once a year, this pollen just all over the place. And all kinds of the bioculture in the forest of pine pollen is really fascinating. Stephen Buhner wrote a whole book about it, and we need to get Stephen back on. But anyway, for a couple more days, we have the pine pollen on sale. And all you have to do is use Pine 20 through Thursday night, and boom, then it's over. It was the biggest sale of the year. So if you hear me talking about it, it's one of my faves. If you'd like to try it, now's a good time. And you get try the Pine Pollen Pure Potency. We think that's really the best one to try. And use Pine 20. It's a very nice thing for guys with the libido and just kind of raising testosterone levels. Many ladies have tried it over the years, and when they go to the perimenopause thing, they seem to prosper a little better or feel better with just a little bit of testosterone. And a lot of the ladies go and get this testosterone, you know, that they have the low T centers you hear on the radio, and we don't really recommend those. Those are lab-based testosterone, and it can put things out of balance pretty easily. So food is the way to go. The Max Planck Institute talked about the importance of only putting things in your body from a once-living source, and that's pretty much everything we promote. We don't do ground-up rocks and stuff like that and lab-based things. For the most part, just from once living source. Our sulfur is made from DMSO and hydrogen peroxide, so that is made, you know, it's not made in the earth, but it's the purest form that we have of the sulfur. Anyway, the Pine 20 is the promo code for Daniel Vitalis on this pine pollen sale. And I think this is a good thing. You know, this is a challenge 5G, but we're learning more and more about it, so listen up.
Previously, we talked with Brandon Amalani about his Blue Shield product to protect against EMFs in your home.
The more connected we are, the more electromagnetic radiation we're going to have. So years ago, I'd play with Q-Links and just anything I can get my hands on that, whether I felt it working or not, I just wanted some kind of leverage against electromagnetic radiation and those frequencies and how they affect the cellular biology. But then when I met Mark and started really getting deep to his technology and really looking at the microprocessing technology, I've never found any EMF company that would not only to test on not only human blood and urine analysis, but also on animals, which totally weeds out the idea of placebo effect. I mean, the fact that you can plug these devices into a chicken farm, a factory farm, for about 15,000 laying hens, and all of a sudden the mortality rate, which is averages from 60 to 150 deaths per month, goes down to zero. I mean, it's pretty profound that a little device, a little energy device, could actually like create such a harmony and balance within the environment, to where claustrophobic chickens that are crammed in together actually get along better and actually feel better, and the biological markers are improved over that 1 year study.
There's quite a bit of science with this Blue Shield product. You can see the ad on the front page. Promo code One Radio will get you a 10% discount. This works on the cells in the body. Very cool technology. Front page, Blue Shield, OneRadioNetwork.com.
We talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning to you. This is Patrick Timpone. We're talking with James Perloff about his book, COVID-19. He's an interesting fellow. He's been around a while and years ago wrote about the New World Order in his book, Shadows of Government, and he's written for just a long, long time. James, talk a little bit about it. I didn't realize that you had a bit of autistic kind of a thing going on early in your life?
Yeah, I was very negatively impacted by the DPT shots in my infancy.
Uh-huh.
Actually, nobody recognized it as such, but I figured
it out. You figured it out.
I had a skin rash that was so bad that my mother, I don't remember because I was only an infant, but she said that it was like my skin was falling off. I had fevers. I couldn't sleep at night, but you look at my medical records. I was getting the DPT shots. The standard they were given every 2 months, and as long as they gave me those DPT shots, I had what they were calling eczema. But as soon as they stopped giving me the shots, eczema went away. But when they gave me a booster when I was about seven, I got a fever and skin rash right away. So yeah, I can figure out I'm a registered nurse myself, by the way.
Right,
I retired last year. But I've been an RN for 45 years, but I was able to figure out that it impacted me. And I don't think it just affected me physically and in terms of fever, but it impacted me neurologically. So I was very extremely withdrawn, had a hard time interacting, couldn't catch a ball if he threw it at me. It wasn't until really I detoxed out of all that stuff that I gradually matured anyway. And I became a Christian. I grew up in an agnostic home. So all these things made a difference. But detoxing, being in saunas, things like that, were a big factor for me for getting rid of those things. But I have no doubt that I was what you would call Asperger's, a low-spectrum autistic early in my life.
So for you, I guess it's very personal and about this whole vaccine thing. It goes all the way back, doesn't it, James, to the untruth about the polio vaccine that we've learned over the years. That thing was crazy.
Sure. Yeah. Believe it or not, I was the poster boy in my hometown at the time of Wellesley, Massachusetts. All the kids were crying when they were being given the polio vaccine, but I wasn't crying. So they decided to photograph me and they put me in the newspaper as a promo for the polio vaccine. But we know that now that those vaccines contained cancer-causing viruses, and well, I've suffered cancer twice in my lifetime, And I first became suspicious about vaccines as a registered nurse in the early 90s. I was working at a major Boston area hospital as a med-surg nurse. And they said, we have a special all hands on deck meeting in the auditorium. Everybody has to attend. We'll go in rotating shifts. And I thought, wow, there must be a national emergency going on. And it turned out that the only thing that they wanted to tell us was that they wanted us all to get the hepatitis B vaccine.
Yes, sir.
Three doses of it. And I said, wait a minute, you know, to get this thing, you have to be injected with a dirty needle. And it is true that in the early days of nursing, when we would recap a needle, I had this happen to myself, by the way, you put the cap on and I've had the needle go right through the cap and stick my finger. Now, but the thing was, at the time of this auditorium meeting talking about, we were getting rid of the needles. We were piggybacking IVs, medications into IVs with adapters instead of using needles. And every room had a red drop box for needles. You never recapped a needle. And so I said, the chances you're getting hepatitis B in this fashion are infinitesimal. And yet they were even assessing that housekeepers get the vaccine. And so I said, why do you want housekeepers to get the vaccine? They don't even have contact with patients. They don't use syringes. They said, well, you never know. A lazy nurse might leave an uncapped needle on the bed. And while the housekeeper's making the bed, she could stick herself. So she's got to get three doses of this thing. And I said, I'm not taking this. And I had no knowledge whatsoever that vaccines were bad. But I just said to myself, in medicine, we're supposed to do what makes sense. And this is not logical at all. I mean, the chances of getting a housekeeper I saw a housekeeper faint from this vaccine.
Yes, sir.
To lay her down on one of our empty hospital beds.
Many people have conjectured that this whole vaccine, the HPV, hepatitis, right? And it went through the nurses, especially the RNs in New Orleans and San Francisco, what, in New York, that was part and parcel of the whole AIDS thing too. Is that right? Something to that?
I can't answer that question competently, but I know that Judy Mikovits has a book that deals a lot with the role of contaminated blood in vaccines, and she gets into the HIV there.
Now, you've studied the shadow government. Yes, you've studied this for many, many years. So, how are you thinking about what they, whoever they are, want to do with COVID and vaccines and potential try to pull off a mandatory? What is your insights in that with all of your background?
Well, we do know that there's a eugenicist outlook that the establishment has. You know, Ted Turner said we need to reduce world population by 95%. Philip famously said back in 1988 that he would want to return. If he died, he'd want to return as a deadly virus to solve overpopulation.
Oh, good.
You know, and there's so many scores of these quotes out there. We know that they're very interested in reducing world population. Bill Gates has talked about reducing, in the TED Talk, talked about reducing it by 10 to 15%.
Yeah.
And his father was a director of Planned Parenthood. That's according to Bill Gates himself, which is the largest provider of abortions in the United States. So a lot of this has to do with population reduction. But I can't help but think that these vaccines that they're now proposing, these Moderna, Novio, and other companies that are developing DNA and mRNA vaccines. I believe, I'm almost positive I saw that you had Dr. Kerry Madej on your show.
Yes, on our website,
speaking out against these DNA-altering vaccines. Actually, I don't go into this in my book because I think it's too radical for most people, but if you look back at spiritual history and you look back at the history of the Earth, I grew up in an agnostic home, so I was like, of course, would laugh at Christians and laugh at the Bible. But you know, the Bible talks about the great flood. Then it turns out there's hundreds of ancient cultures that had a flood legend. The ancient Greeks, even you go up to Aleutian Islands or the islands, the island that we now call Taiwan. All the ancient cultures had this, almost all of them had a history of the flood that covered the earth. And actually, wrote books about Darwinism in the late 90s, I started to realize that, the earth is, rock is 75% sedimentary, you know, mostly created by erosion from water. And the earth is filled with billions and billions of fossils. Now, we don't see fossils getting created today, but to create a fossil, you have to be covered with sediment very quickly, which the flood of those times would have created. But what actually caused God to start the flood? The Bible, I don't feel, really gives us a full picture. It talks about violence being, the earth being filled with violence, and it talks about the sons of God, which are a reference to angels. Some of theologians would disagree with that, but the angels actually interbred with humans, creating a kind of transhumanistic species of human. The giants, the Bible talks about giants, and we've actually had skeletons of giants dug up here in North America quite often, but that information has been suppressed. I do go into that in my book, on my blog, jamespiloff.com, called Making Sense of the Supernatural. And it's also a chapter in my book, 13 Pieces of the Jigsaw.
Yeah, that's a classic book, isn't it? That's a classic.
We're talking about transhumanism. We're seeing transgenderism with transsexuality. And this is something that is not pleasing to God. If you actually go outside the Bible to the extra biblical books of Enoch, which is actually quoted in the Bible, and Jasher and Jubilees, which are referenced by the Bible, although they're not considered canonical books, they actually talk about how fallen angels were or intermingling animal species. And so perhaps some of these things about Hercules and about the centaur, which was part horse and part human, now we're mingling human genes with animal genes. We're doing it on a regular basis. And so when you talk about these RNA DNA vaccines, we seem like we're getting into a very Luciferian process where, especially when they talk about it's not going to be one COVID vaccine, you need to get regular COVID vaccines, which they can justify because the coronavirus does mutate very rapidly. So they'll say, oh, well, that was good for last year's COVID, but now you need a new one. They might actually start changing the human species. In fact, I won't talk much longer here. I want to throw it back to you, but
that's all right.
Moderna in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which is creating this messenger RNA vaccine. Their chief medical director, Tal Zaks, who is a former IDF medic, Israeli Defense Force, gave a TED talk where he boasted that what we're doing is hacking the software of life. Now that we're hacking your DNA, we're going to change your DNA. That is very dangerous. You cannot predict. Maybe they can. I don't know. But what are going to be the final outcome of changing your DNA? And I think that this is a major part. Sure, part of it is profits. My wife has a friend whose son works at Moderna. And my wife tells me they have billionaires at Moderna just because the stock price has gone so sky high from all this government funding and Bill Gates funding. But I think it's not just about money. They use money as a carrot to get people to go along with the agenda. But I think if you look at the deeper agenda, they're talking about transhumanizing us. And I believe that I watched just a brief excerpt of Dr. Carrie Madej's interview with you, where she talked about this. They're actually transhumanizing people. And I think that is what they're after in the long run. This is very dangerous. And I think that people should definitely be rejecting any kind of DNA altering vaccine. No question about it. Your DNA is fine just the way it is.
Yeah. How deep, maybe it's a dumb question, but so if you look at the FDA, James Perloff, and the National Institute of Health, and the CDC, and the AMA, it feels like these folks are all swampy, aren't they? I mean, is that too critical? Is that close?
Well, this was written about a long time ago that Rockefeller-funded individuals had taken over the AMA around 1900.
Yes, sir.
And actually, I have an excerpt from an article here written in 2018. It's in my book about the amazing number of FDA officials who just in the year 2018 went over to the work the pharmaceutical industry. Of course, Julie Gerberding, who was head of the CDC from 2002 to 2009, is now head of Merck's vaccine division. And she recently sold $9 million worth of Merck stock. So there's this great revolving door between the FDA, the CDC, I guess you could say the AMA,
sure,
and the pharmaceutical industry. And of course, they fund the commercials, the advertisements in the medical journals for the most part. So even many doctors live in this matrix. I know doctors who are totally red pilled, but I also know smart doctors who are totally blue pilled because they've just lived in that matrix all their lives, have never stepped outside of it. And it's a tough thing, as you know, to get somebody to step. We were all, I think, blue pilled at one time. Certainly was.
Sure.
I was reading Gary Allen's book in 1978, None Dare Call a Conspiracy, that kind of pulled me out of that. I said, wait a minute, history's got another story. History's got a pattern that makes sense to me. And that was when I started my journey of
I like that story I read on your site. By the way, your website is jamesperloff.com, right? Jamesperloff.com?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I read that.
And P-E-R-L-O-F-F.
P-E-R-L-O-F-F. And you actually, your life kind of turned around. What was it, in the late 70s? I read a book, too, right around that time. I was in New Orleans, and some gal gave me a book, and boy, about health. And I just, like, exploded. I said, what? You know? So the same thing happened to you with the politics and the geopolitics. And you read this book, and you had an aha moment, like, wait a minute, what am I doing? Or you explain. What was your experience?
That book totally changed my life. I've told this story probably too often, but
that's right.
I actually just saw a girl reading this book, and I didn't speak to her, but I looked at the cover and I said, you know what, you have to get a copy of that book. And so I went to a local bookstore, and sure enough, it was right there on the bookshelf. And that book really changed my whole outlook. And then at that time, the John Birch Society, which I know falls under a lot of criticism these days, I understand that. People say that's a limited hangout. But at that time, the John Birch Society was the only major organization that was really saying there was a conspiracy behind the federal government. And they were talking about the Council of Foreign Relations, the Federal Reserve, the false flags that brought us into wars. They were avoiding some topics, which are still sensitive to them. But I will say that they were instrumental in changing my outlook. So I was started writing for their magazine, the New American Magazine, which started publishing in the mid-1980s, replacing two earlier journals that they'd put out. And then I came up with The Shadows of Power, and I've certainly been convinced ever since. And I've been, for me, it's been a learning curve all the way, as I think it is for most of us, learning more and more about this. You're peeling off layers of the onion as you learn more and more about the New World Order and its whole history through time. But it draws you closer to the truth. It's interesting that as we're moving closer to the truth, it seems people who are matrixed, living in the matrix, as they continue to swallow false information, they are moving further away from us, and there's a greater polarization.
They must be frightened at all these unknowns and what when they hear people. What do you? Anyway, James Perloff is with us. His book is called COVID-19. I'm not sure why I can't get it up by itself, because I wanted to show it to you. I got something. There it is. I finally did it. There's a copy of the book, COVID-19 and the Agenda to Come, Red Pilled, James Perloff. You can get that on his website, I'm sure. Amazon too, James, you can do that, Amazon?
Well, actually, the only place you can get it right now is on Amazon. Amazon can get a book up within 48 hours. I'm waiting for my bulk copies to come in still.
I see.
So right now, the place to buy it is on Amazon. By the way, this book, after 2 days, ranked number 254 of all books on Amazon. That's the best I've ever done on Amazon. So there's a very good response to it so far.
Yeah, well, that's great. So what are some things that if folks get this book that they're gonna learn here that we haven't learned, well, so far? I mean, what are some of the things that you uncovered that were like real, whoa, I can't believe this is going on?
Well, for a lot of people, it's going to depend on how much they already know.
Sure.
I designed this to be something that you could share with a blue-pilled person. Now, the book has almost 300 endnotes. Everything is sourced. I quote scientists from around the world. Many cases, they have already had their YouTube interviews censored. But what I've done is I've taken written transcripts and selected key excerpts because I wanted to preserve this in hard copy for people. And the book is broken into 27 chapters and five major sections. And just to go through it so people know what they'd be getting. The first section is on the lockdown. And I start with the lockdown because the lockdown is indisputable. So we talk about the economic and health impact. We have a chapter on civil liberties impact, mm-hmm. a chapter with experts, medical experts from around the world saying the lockdown is totally unnecessary. And then a chapter on the masks and the social distancing, which are obviously, you know, the two key components right now of the lockdown. And part two is called The Methodology of Panic, and I have chapters on COVID-19. You know, compared to past pandemics, I knew this as a registered nurse. You don't quarantine healthy people. And we've had worse pandemics in my lifetime, the Hong Kong flu and the Asian flu. We didn't lock down. We didn't wear masks. So I put that in perspective. And I also have a chapter on fake news I'm not talking about alt media. I'm talking about fake news in the mainstream, like them taking a picture of an Italian ER in St. Louis, New York, you know, some flagrant stuff. And then I have a disclaimer, too, in there that we're not saying the disease doesn't exist or that nobody dies from COVID. But then I talk about the various ways they have panicked numbers. And first, you start out with the inaccurate. We have a chapter on the inaccurate modeling that was done early on. This is especially true for Imperial College and Neil Ferguson. You know, Neil Ferguson called Professor Lockdown, prescribed that we had to lock down, and they actually used his model, Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci, to convince Trump to lock down America. But it turns out that he himself is not observing his own lockdown. He's carrying on an affair with a married woman.
Right, I saw that.
and his model is totally discredited now. Then we talk about inflating deaths by saying that anybody who dies with another diagnosis, I'm sure you've covered this on your show.
Yes, we have.
If you're dying of cancer or heart disease or lung disease, but you happen to have COVID, they'll call that a COVID death. So they bump up numbers that way. Another way is there's been a lot of tampering with death certificates. And we quote doctors who have had experience with that in the book. And then the whole nursing home thing, you know, these are real deaths, but quite unnecessarily. I've worked in hospitals and I've worked in nursing homes. You know, they did the exact opposite. The protocol in a nursing home was if a patient has a fever in a nursing home, we would send them to the hospital to have them worked up, get x-rays, start them on IV fluids, antibiotics, and they'd come back to the nursing home, right? They did the exact opposite with COVID in places like New York and Pennsylvania. They took the sick and sent them into the nursing homes, where I know for a fact they're not equipped in most nursing homes to deal with infectious diseases. They're not equipped. A lot of the personnel don't have the training to deal with isolation. And so it easily spread in nursing homes and caused a huge percentage of deaths. And then I have another chapter on the accuracy of COVID testing. Then part three is on theories about COVID-19. So I cover the mainstream theory, the bioweapon theory, which Professor Luc Montagnier, winner of the Nobel Prize for discovering the AIDS virus, he believes it's definitely a bioweapon, and so do many other distinguished individuals who have great experience in this area. And then I talk about whether or not this was deliberately released or was it just an accident. Then I also have a chapter devoted to the 5G theory, because I know that that's become very popular,
out there,
especially
right?
with people like David Icke. I know you had Meg DeHavis on.
Yes, we have.
I don't know if she talked about 5G, but she's a scholar, and she's pointed out there's a much stronger incidence of COVID in areas that have 5G. Not that it's exclusive to those areas by any means, but there are scholars on both sides of that argument, but I wanted to give them a voice. And I have another chapter on various other theories about about COVID, including Andrew Kaufman, Stephanie Seneff, Thomas Cowan,
do you know him?
Dr. Zach.
Yeah, Zach Bush.
Thomas Cowan, yeah. Arthur Furstenberg, who talks in his book, Little Rainbow, about past pandemics correlating with changes in the ionosphere. Then part four is the deep state's end game. So I have chapters on population reduction, a whole chapter on Bill Gates. You got to give Bill Gates a chapter, you know, that guy. Because he's the main spokesperson for this whole COVID response, even though he has no medical credentials whatsoever. And then I have chapters on global vaccine, a chapter called 8 Reasons We Don't Need a Global Vaccine. And then a whole chapter on hydroxychloroquine, which is really the created a whole storm over that recently. A chapter on the global digital ID, a chapter on cashless society, and a chapter on contact tracing and what that means for a surveillance state. And the fifth major part, is called What May Lay Ahead, and it chapters on possible scenarios that could unfold in the future. You have to be very careful with that. It's very hard to predict the future. But I think it's safe to say that we are planning to mandate global vaccine is a pretty safe guess. And then chapter 7 is called Hope and Encouragement, and I talk about some of the awakening that's taking place around the world, because I don't want to just be a downer.
No, there's a lot of people waking up.
Awakening. A lot of people are waking up, and I quote, for example, major religious leaders, Muslim, evangelical, Catholic, and Orthodox, who are speaking out. And police officers and more doctors and some of the protests that have been successful. And so I just want to give people some encouragement at the end of the book. And by the way, I also put a painstaking index into this book too, because I want to make sure people could find information fast. I want to make sure that it would be a useful book for individuals to use.
I actually read James Perloff. There's areas in Africa and everything where they're kicking Bill Gates out, and they're talking about, and they're doing pretty well with this thing, not getting all involved in it dramatically and masking people up in that too, parts of Africa.
Right. In Tanzania, you know, they did something very tricky. The WHO was down there doing testing, and they took submit a fruit and one other animal, I guess it was a goat, and they all came back COVID positive, and then they kicked them out of Tanzania, and they said enough is enough, you know. So I'm sure that some COVID results are accurate. You know, I have a friend who is a totally red pill doctor, works in a major, major hospital, and they use very sophisticated testing that was able to corroborate some of the COVID testing. So I'm not saying it's all phony, but I'm sure you know that there was a scandal down in Florida. Yes. Recently, I didn't put this in my book, it came out too late, where there were labs that were reporting 100% positive, which just wasn't positive. So I think they are monkeying sometimes with these results of the test in order to hype. Dr. Ron Paul, who is not only a former congressman and presidential candidate, but also a physician, has pointed out that the death rate has dropped 90%. So they switched from, he pointed out, they switched from COVID deaths to COVID positives to panic the public. They don't talk about the deaths so much anymore. They talk about the COVID positives, which doesn't mean anything if you're asymptomatic. It really doesn't. If you're not coughing, you've got no fever, you just have a few strands of DNA left over from having contacted this virus in the past, and that shows up on your PCR test, really doesn't mean anything.
What do you make about this announcement, what, last couple of days, of this idea of plasma, where you get plasma theoretically from someone who has had this alleged virus, and then they have this immunity, so they get their blood, and they say that there's, you know, pretty good hit with this thing, and the president is out there really pumping it up. Have you learned anything about this? Do you know anything about it?
You know, I've only seen the headlines. It reminds me of Dr. Brzezinski, who was able to combat cancer by using elements of other people's blood who had defeated cancer and help out other cancer victims. I haven't actually studied that at all. It sounds interesting, but I also have to say that CDC, their latest numbers are that 99.74% of all people survive COVID. So that, of course, is one of the reasons why a vaccine is ridiculous. If so many people can defeat it with their own immune systems, I don't know that you really need this plasma, especially if you've got hydroxychloroquine. And there are other things they talk about in there. There's a study at Northwestern that shows a definite correlation between COVID death and vitamin D deficiency.
Yes, sir.
And there is a Dr. Bartlett in Texas has had great success using Budesimide, I hope I'm saying that right.
Right.
It's a inhaler that's had great success in the Far East. He started using it and has 100% success. And he's a 28-year physician. He's had 100% success using that inhaler against COVID. So there's a lot of ways, and maybe this plasma is as well. I'm not sure if you need it, but I have not studied it at all. But yeah, I did see the headlines on that.
How concerned are you, let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, 0 would be not concerned at all, 10 would be very concerned about forces that you write about that would be able to succeed in a mandatory COVID vax? That may be more legal stuff that we can't get into today, but on a 1 to 10, where are you with that?
How likely they'll make it mandatory?
That they'll get away with making mandatory.
I think that they probably will, or at least will say you have to stay in quarantine if you don't take it. You know, Massachusetts has already made it, where I live, that's already made it mandatory for all students to get a flu shot.
Yes.
And so they're just a step away from making a COVID. Yeah. Yeah. But that's kind of crazy because they're not letting students back into college for such a great degree. And so, why are you going to make it mandatory if they're not even returning to the classroom? But I know that Denmark has made it passed a law saying they have the right to vaccinate people against their will. And you probably saw the exchange between Jason Goodman of Crowdsource the Truth with Alan Dershowitz, where he says that under the Constitution, you have no right to refuse a vaccine. Yeah. Did you see that? Yeah, I quote it in my book.
Yeah.
And that is pretty crazy, but it goes back to a case of smallpox around the turn of the century.
In 1905, right?
Yeah. Where the state mandated that this town of Cambridge, which is where Moderna is, ironically, had the right to force a smallpox vaccine, and there was a pastor who refused it, and they made him pay a $5 fine after the Supreme Court decided. That's not much of a precedent, but that's what basically Dershowitz is going on. But there's nothing constitutionally, you know, that gives you the state, the federal government that right. You know, according to the Constitution, anything that's not specifically outlined in the Constitution for the states, it is not a federal. So like abortion never should have gone to the Supreme Court because it's not mentioned in the Constitution. Now you can change anything in the Constitution that you want if you get the 2/3 majority necessary to create an amendment. If you want to amend the Constitution, you can.
Sure.
But the Supreme Court, as you know, has been trampling on the Supreme Court for a long time. I experienced that in the early 60s when you had 5 out of 9 Supreme Court justices were Freemasons, who I believe consider their oath to the Brotherhood to outweigh their oath to the Constitution, and they threw God out of the schools. They made it illegal to read the Bible or to pray in schools. And I don't think it's any coincidence that right around 1963 is when you saw this big change from what I call, that's the beginning of, you know, 64, you had the Beatles and Tonkin Gulf, and late 63, you had the Kennedy assassination. And according to Malachi Martin, in the summer of 63, Satan was enthroned, Lucifer was enthroned in the Vatican. That was in the middle of the great Catholic change that was taking place in the early 60s.
Yeah, when that was
Vatican II, I'm sorry.
Vatican II, when that was going on with the Pope.
Now, I don't know if that's true about them enthroning Lucifer in the Vatican. That's what Malachi Martin says. But I do know that there was a tremendous change from what we call a Leave It to Beaver culture in 63 to a Woodstock culture in 69. I don't think it's a coincidence. I think there were definitely spiritual things happening at that time. And the Supreme Court, being dominated by Freemasons, was definitely instrumental in bringing about those changes.
Hopefully the awareness and pushback on the potential dangers and not being able to have proof of being safe and effective, that the COVID vaccine, you know, all this won't even get to the Supreme Court, James. Maybe, you know, maybe it'll just die on the vine somewhere between. I've seen some numbers, and there's a whole lot of people, you know, in our culture that don't want anything to do with the vaccine for this, because the awareness, even with the, you know, the cancellation of all YouTube videos and Facebook and stuff, the awareness of the dangers is really growing, I think.
Right. I think that a lot of the this is backfiring on them. They used to have this policy of boil log, do things so slowly people won't notice. Right. But they got their foot on the accelerator, and that is shaking people, a lot of people awake. A lot of people, unfortunately, not. But I think the more we get the word out, and that's why I document my book, almost 300 end notes, all the scholars and a lot of the mainstream and even the CDC itself, to show people what's really going on. I think that the more, and I see you've had some great, great guests on your podcast.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
You've had Martha Daniels on, I saw recently. I've only seen one interview with her, but she's great, Dr. Martha Daniels.
Oh, Jennifer Daniels,
And you know something? She said, she said something on another show. I didn't watch her interview with you, but she said that her life was threatened. And she said, you know what, you go ahead and take my life because it's more important to me to speak the truth. And they backed off and they didn't kill her. And I think that that might be true of these lockdown measures. If we push back enough and refuse to comply, they may go back to the drawing board. And I think it's very important that we do this. They are pushing really hard to get this. But if enough people resist, I know in Serbia, they fought in the streets, and Serbia reversed its lockdown.
Really?
As a result of resistance. And recently in Germany, I don't know the true number. Some people said 700,000 people took to the streets in Germany to protest the lockdown. And in Germany, they've been a lot more honest about the death rates. There was recently a video, I haven't seen it yet, but I believe it's been endorsed by 1,000 doctors in Germany that the whole COVID thing is nonsense. And so it's harder and harder for them to resist the resistance from the medical community and from other scholars. And I think that if we fight this thing hard enough, it's possible they might call this thing off. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yes, sir.
And that's what we really got to work for right now. Otherwise, they are really going to implement this digital ID and say you can't even, you know, leave your home unless you get this DNA-altering vaccine. It's we're at a very dangerous juncture of history.
I'm wondering, James Perloff, if these people will be satisfied with getting a portion or a hunk or a certain state of consciousness. People, you know, the blue pill folks, God love them, will just kind of go along and they'll just get what they can and leave the rest of us alone. That's possible too.
Well, these are pretty mean dudes, you know. I mean, you look what happened. If you looked at what happened in Bolshevik Russia, and we're really talking about the same people that funded the Bolshevik Revolution, they didn't leave the people against Bolshevism alone. They sent them into gulags and killed them.
Yeah, we don't want to.
So I don't think they're going to be any form merciful here in America. I think that if they can get away with it, they'll kill everybody who's against them. So no, I'm not confident that they're going to be kind-hearted and say, well, we'll settle for a percentage.
Okay, you're not going there. All right, stay right there. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com with James Perloff and his book about COVID. We'll kind of take a little break here and then we'll wrap it up and then talk about gold in a little while, about half an hour. If you'd like to be on the show, 888-663-6386. What do you think? What are you thinking about? What are you hearing in your neighborhood? Shoot us an email or something. OneRadioNetwork.com. This is a wonderful fellow who we had developed a great relationship over the years. He was out there talking about Mercury before it was even cool. And boy, they, you know, whoever they are, they came after him. And he fought and he lost his house and lost everything. But he never relented. Dr. Hal Huggins.
Previously, Dr. Hal Huggins on detoxing mercury.
You do not have to get all the mercury out of the body. That's not what the problem is. It's the direction it's going. If you have more going out than you have coming in, then you're going to have a good chemistry. You're going to feel good. But if you have more going in to the body than going out, chemistries look bad and you feel bad.
If you had to name just a few things on the top of your list to help get mercury out, whether they be supplements or foods, give us your top five.
Okay.
Off the top of your head.
Best thing would be the infrared sauna. The thing is, detoxification is easy. Anybody can release a lot of mercury. But if you're using a sauna, or especially the infrared sauna, then you are eliminating the mercury through the skin, and you are bypassing liver and kidney. So that's a very good way to go.
It is certainly a very good way to go. God love him. I miss Dr. Huggins. He's been gone for a few years now, but what a wonderful guy. So these saunas that you can see a picture of, if you're on video and audio, you can go to just the front page of One Radio Network, click on the sauna, and these are quite unique units. They're portable. They're using the space-age kind of technology, which is silver, which is antifungal and bacterial. And you sit in the sauna, and it comes with a real nice, comfortable chair, not some flimsy camper's chair, a real solid chair. Put a towel over that, and then your head is sticking out. You have two different units, one on the corner that you can put your feet on. And this baby will rev up to probably 160 degrees or so, or just use one unit, maybe 120, and then you'll sweat. But then you also, I mean, you really sweat, but you also have the wonderful technology of the far infrared rays that kind of bounce all over the place with this material and gets the whole body. Quite exceptional technology. They've won 2-3 awards. And they're made in Taiwan. And we ship them all over the world. All over the world. We've shipped them everywhere. Pretty much everywhere but Germany. I don't know. We can't do them over there. I don't understand why that is. But whatever. If you don't live in Germany, then you're good. And we'll ship it to you. Just email me where you live. Give me your address so we can, it's easy to find it. And then I'll give you the exact cost. And it's not as much as you think. We ship these to Canada all the time for maybe $125 above our retail price that we sell them to you, which is the best price ever that you can find anywhere, which is $1,150. $1,150, and that's in the lower 48, the contiguous U.S. For those of you in Portland, that means it doesn't count Alaska or Hawaii. But just email me where you are, and I'll give you the price. And the only way you can get this is by emailing me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. patrick@oneradionetwork.com, and we'll hook you up. James Perloff, our guest, and we'll be back to him in a second. He mentioned Dr. Seneff, and she's been quite a regular visitor on our show.
Dr. Stephanie Seneff, Senior Research Team, MIT, answers a question from one of our listeners.
There are certain things that would help us to clear these things out and help the body to begin heal.
I think sulfur. I think eating a great deal of sulfur-containing foods and also soaking in Epsom salt baths, because you need to beef up your sulfur supply in order to generally be able to fight, to allow your liver to heal. So you're sort of, once your liver can heal, then you can detoxify, you know. So you really need to work on getting the liver healthy. And one of those crucial issues for that is the sulfur. Those enzymes are affected by all kinds of different toxic chemicals. And glyphosate prevents the body from disposing of those chemicals. Because of disrupting, glyphosate actually really disrupts the sulfur cycle in a big way. It interferes with sulfate transport. Of course, it doesn't allow the activation of vitamin D, and vitamin D protects you from sulfate flushing through the kidneys.
Sulfur, sulfur, sulfur. We love it. Pure organic sulfur. Three prices, United States, Canada, and worldwide. Click and order 24/7 right here, oneradionetwork.com.
Yeah, bet your boots, baby. We also have a product that, man, this is one of my faves ever. You can see a picture of it here on video here. If not, check it out once again for your audio files. That's fine. Just go to our website. It's 100% pure, fresh, frozen aloe vera gel. This is, whoa, if you have a little constipation stuff, you can't find a better food on the planet, because it's a food and it's not just some herb, you know, that's pushing it through and then you get addicted to them. It's a wonderful plant. You can rub this baby on your face, and it's a 2 minimum deal, 2 half gallons. It's Stockton Aloe 1, fresh frozen, no preservatives, no chemical. It's a great product, one of the best ones that we know for getting aloe into your body. Stockton Aloe 1 on our website.
Know the source.
The source.
OneRadioNetwork.com.
Talk with a nice fellow, James Perloff. He was looking at the whole New World Order thing long ago. In 85, he started writing for the New American Magazine, and that was a pretty cool thing. Are they still around, James Perloff, the New American Magazine?
Oh, absolutely, sure. Mm-hmm. They actually still print a hard copy magazine as well as having an online edition.
Yeah, they're still pretty far out there. I mean, as far as red pills.
Well, you know, a lot of people were disappointed that they didn't tackle 9/11 as hard as they could have. Mm-hmm. You know, this was they had been saying there was a conspiracy behind the government for years, and 9/11 was a real opportunity for them to kind of take the leadership and say, you know, we've told you all along that this was the case, and they kind of dropped the ball on 9/11. They didn't on the Oklahoma City bombing, but 9/11 they really never went into the much. And I think that disappointed a lot of people, but they still are very strong on, you know, constitutional issues, and still are a reliable source for people who want to find out more about the history of our country and what we need to do to preserve our liberties.
If you're on hold, stay there, and we're going to get right to you. Stay right there. I don't know why this thing wants to do that and do it over us, but I don't know. It's acting weird. I just wanted to show you James' book picture. It's supposed to just be that thing. I don't know. Something's wrong. It's called COVID-19 and the Agenda to Come, Red Pilled. And that's the book. You can get it on Amazon real soon. On the phone, who's this? Good morning.
Hi, my name is Jim.
Hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're on the air with James Perloff.
Yeah, and it's an honor. James, I've been following your work for a long time. I have My copy of Truth is a Lonely Warrior, which I recommend to many people as a really good overview of gaining some understanding about why things are the way they are in the world today. The New World Order agenda is very real. It's been a work in progress for a long time. Anyway, James, in my own development of my knowledge and understanding about the whole concept of viruses, I think it's very important to consider some mainstream dogma about viruses. It's mainstream establishment, and that is viruses have no metabolism of their own. Now, I know most people, when they read that, they're going to just continue reading because they don't understand what they just read. If a virus does not have metabolism of its own, it's not alive. And, metabolism is all about energy production and energy utilization. And if there's no energy being produced, where does a so-called virus get the energy to invade a living cell? Where does it get the energy to replicate? It's not alive. It's an inanimate particle, which is supported by recent research and advocacy by Dr. Andrew Kaufman, Dr. Thomas Cowan, and others have been supporting that the whole theory of viruses as disease-causing entities is completely fraudulent to begin with. And
okay, James, again, hold on a second. Yeah, we got you. James Perloff mentioned that. So you're calling because you just want to give your opinion that you think that's what it is, Jim?
I've come to the understanding that viruses as disease-causing organisms do not exist. And I'm a nutrition and health educator, Patrick. In fact, I was the chief nutritionist at Dr. Mercola's Optimal Wellness Center for many years. In the glory days of the Optimal Wellness Center, when because of the popularity of his website, we were the busiest nutrition-based health centers in the country. And so,
okay, fair enough. So you're a non-existing kind of guy, and you just think the rest of it is all you're saying is smoke and mirrors. Don't want to put words in your mouth, but
no. Well, to be very direct about it, I think the coronavirus pandemic is for the dumbed down and brainwashed masses. And an example of the idiocy of this was in April. There was a headline in the Washington Post that read as follows: "The coronavirus is not alive. That's why it's so hard to kill."
All right, James. All right, Jim. Thank you.
The correct response to that.
We appreciate your participation. Good stuff. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. So you alluded to that, James. I guess, do you think we're ever going to really know for sure what this thing is or isn't, as the caller is alluding to, and many others, by the way, as you know, you mentioned already, Kaufman and the rest?
Actually, in my 2013 book, Truth is a Lonely Warrior, I mentioned viruses, and I alluded to the fact that Wikipedia said there's great controversy among scientists about whether viruses are really living creatures or not. And in my new book, COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come, Red Pilled, I do refer to Andrew Kaufman. I don't spend much time on him. It's just a long paragraph. But it was a 38-minute video where he talked about how under an electron microscope, what they're calling the COVID-19 virus is identical to exosomes.
Exosomes, right.
These exosomes are actually parts of the cell that are simply exudates that are removing toxins. And he names a number of possible causes of toxins, including electromagnetic frequencies. And I do mention Dr. Thomas Cowan and Arthur Furstenberg and Dr. Robert O. Young, who also believe this same idea.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that there's such a thing as infection. I've seen it happen so many times that a child comes home from school with a cold or flu, and then it spreads to mom and then to dad. And we see this happening. So this happening with, there was a ship where Navy sailors got the mumps, and it spread all through the sailors. And you know, the spread of smallpox among the Indians. We see that there is, I believe there's such a thing as infection, but I certainly can accept the idea that viruses are a different entity than what we've been told. I believe that yeah, it's probably very true that they're not alive, that they are simply viral components. It does appear that they can spread from one person to another because of the infectiousness that I was just talking about. But the idea that it's not not like a bacterium, like a self-sufficient molecule, is very acceptable to me. We know that viruses, to stay alive, they have to have a host organism. They cannot survive a very long outside of something, a human being or an animal or other living organism, yeah, in order to continue to exist. So, yeah, I think that more work needs to be done in exploring this. And definitely, I think that Andrew Kaufman has made some valuable contributions in giving us insight into what the nature of viruses may really be.
Fair enough. I'd like to recommend somebody, because evidently you've looked at our website, and there's a fellow that we have on once a month. His name is Dr. Richard Massey. And the last time he was on, and if you would look on our website, James, if you'd like to, and just scroll down, you'll find the last time a couple of weeks ago. And I know that you've written about evolution, you know, and how this all worked, and the DNA and all that. And his argument is pretty interesting, that these exosomes is something that we breathe in and out every day, right? And as we breathe in and out, we're also sharing them with all living organisms on the planet. And this is how we evolve and teach each other and help each other for our DNA and our RNA to evolve. That's pretty interesting, isn't it? Yeah, listen to that show. I think you'll enjoy it, being a, you know, because you've written a lot about, you know, the evolutionary process and how it all worked. And I think you'd enjoy this. His name is Richard Massey. You know, it's a great...
Yeah, I'll try to check that out.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, that's not an area, as far as the virus as being
a
part of the process of humans evolving and improving, and sharing information. That sounds very credible to me, as a general impression.
Kind of makes sense, right?
I'd like to listen to what Massey specifically has to say.
Yeah. So before we go, we just have a few minutes. Let's just do a little bit for local political junkies to kind of get your take, which I'm sure you have it because you study it, on what's going on. I heard Donald Trump the last few days say that he was blaming the deep state for holding back the virus, you know, the vaccine testing till after the election. And I don't think there's any question that there's a group, whatever you call them, the deep state or the boys, the CFRs that want Donald Trump out. What do you think his whole connection could be? I mean, I know it's all conjecture. You don't know for sure. Nobody does. With this deep state and his position as president?
I guess what most troubled me about Donald Trump was his deep loyalty to Netanyahu and the Israeli state. The fact that, you know, I have Christian friends from Syria, and, you know, he bombed Syria twice with cruise missiles based on really the flimsiest of evidence that there'd been a chemical weapons attack. It turned out there was no chemical weapons attack in either case. He's recognized the Golan Heights, which belong to Syria, as being part of Israel. He moved our embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. He's established the first permanent U.S. military base in Israel. And, you know, within a month of his inauguration, he already had Netanyahu at the White House. During his campaign, he said that our allies need to learn to defend themselves without depending on U.S. taxpayers, yet he has continued to shower U.S. tax dollars on Israel, even though Israel has a huge technocratic state with $1 billion in industries within it. You know, the Bible says don't give bribes to the rich. Well, Israel is a rich state, and yet our tax dollars are not going to the poorest of people, are going to this very rich country. And I have to say that President Trump, in my view, has been following a very deep state, the Zionist, who, if you look at their documents, when the world government is established, they intend to have the capital of that government, because every government has a capital, to be in Jerusalem. There's been talk of that for a long time, going back to Ben Gurion and Look magazine in 1962. So I voted for Donald Trump. It was a no-brainer not to vote for Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton was deep state in everything, from abortion to transgender to foreign policy, bombing other countries, censoring the internet, good friend of Goldman Sachs, you name it. Hillary Clinton, it was a no-brainer, and Trump had all the right sound bites. If you read, though, somebody like Pastor Chuck Baldwin, has a post on, I don't remember the exact name, but it refers to the 10 lies of Donald Trump. And Baldwin had a recent post up. He pointed out that had Hillary Clinton been president when all this happened, and she tried to shut down the churches would have revolted en masse. I mean, if she tried to cancel baptisms and the pastor would say, no way, Hillary, we're going to keep our churches open. But because Donald Trump said we're going to have a lockdown, the churches and the evangelicals went down. In fact, I recently saw a statement on social media, the 4,000 signatories from the evangelical world saying we should have a COVID vaccine. So Donald Trump, I think from the viewpoint of the deep state, they hate his deplorables. They hate constitutionalists. They hate pro-gun people.
Nationalists.
They don't like the people who support Donald Trump. But they may perhaps feel that he can control the masses better than a Hillary Clinton type. And I just want to give a lesson here. When Richard Nixon went to China and opened up relations with China with Henry Kissinger at his side, President Lyndon Baines Johnson complained. And he said, you know what? If I or any other Democrat had done that, they would have called us a commie pinko. But because Nixon went to China and opened up relations with Mao Zedong and Chou Enlai, he got away with it. And so they know that if you have somebody with sort of conservative credentials, they can actually make greater change for you than somebody who is identified with the left or the radical left. I do like what Trump said about hydroxychloroquine, alternative measures, pulling funding from the WHO. I like some of the things Trump has done. I want to give a balanced picture. But there are those who believe that having him there actually serves the purposes of the deep state.
Other people are making that argument. Who's the fellow we had on? Brandon Smith? Something like that. Yeah.
Well, I think I quote him in my book.
Yeah, Brandon Smith.
Get a
cool
great
guy.
On the Fed and the economic reset.
And he's arguing that the boys, you know, the deep state, they'll have a better time with getting Donald Trump to do what they want because of his personality and everything with the, you know, and there's some evidence to that, I guess, because if they really wanted to win on the left, they'd have somebody other than Joe Biden here. Hey, we have to run, James. Thanks for being on the show. Let's see if I can get the copy of your book up properly. And oh, no, it's still there. Yeah, I got it up there. I don't know why it does that, you know. Okay, anyway, here it is, COVID-19 Red Pilled, James Perloff on Amazon. James, thanks for being here. It was fun having you on. Good luck with all your research. Take care of yourself and stay under the radar, okay?
Well, thank you, Patrick. And I see you've been having a lot of great guests on. I'm not alluding to myself here. I just look at the past list of guests you've had. You're doing a tremendous job of bringing the truth to the people, especially on this COVID issue.
Well, we try. Thank you very much, sir. We'll see you soon, okay?
Okay. God bless. Thanks to you and to the viewers and listeners.
Yeah, James Perloff, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Okay, we got to scoot, and we're going to make way for...